it becomes more important to eat more protein the older you get. So, you know, young, you can, yeah, get away with less protein, but older, you generally need more protein. And in the elderly, in like 70s or 80-year-olds, then higher protein intakes are better for them.
Resetters, Dr. Mindy here, and I am on a mission to teach you just how powerful your body was built to be. This podcast is about giving you the power back and helping you believe in yourself again. Let's jump in. On this episode of the Resetter podcast, I bring you Simland. So I hope you all know who he is. If you don't, I hope you go and follow his content because he has got some great information on fasting and autophagy, which is what we're going to talk about in this episode. We have, by the way, I have very few episodes that are specifically dedicated to the healing mechanisms that happen in fasting, and many of you have asked me for them. So I brought you Simland. He has an incredible YouTube channel. So the first thing I want to let you know is he's a fellow YouTuber and you should go check out his YouTube channel. Second thing I want you all to know is that I really wanted to dive into all the nuances of autophagy. And let me tell you why. So if you're not familiar with the concept of autophagy, it is your cells' ability to heal themselves. And everything I teach and talk about here on the Resetter podcast is about giving you the healing power back. So much of our world, we have given the power to doctors, we have given the power to medication or even to supplements or even now to biohacks. But honestly, you're the power. And when we go and we look at autophagy, and study it, and we see that our brilliant, intelligent body has this inner repair system, all of a sudden we become in awe of ourselves. And so every question that has been asked, or the main questions, I should say, that have been asked about autophagy, I wanted to dive into here with Sim. And a large part of why I chose him was because he knows the science and he applies it himself. And he also has tied in some really interesting thoughts around exercise and autophagy and nutrients and autophagy. So if you're curious about this incredible healing response that lives within the trillion of cells in your body, this is your episode. And let me tell you a little bit about the specificity of what we talked about. So many of you have asked, collagen in my coffee, does that pull me out of autophagy? Amino acids in a drink during my fasting window, does that pull up me out of autophagy? How much protein pulls me out of autophagy? When do I go into autophagy? What kind of herbs are going to help me in and out of autophagy? I love in here he talks about we need to look at autophagy as like wax on, wax on, wax off. You go into autophagy, you come out of it, and you do this periodically throughout the day. So it's a really deep conversation on a miraculous healing process, and I'm so excited for you all to geek out with me on it. Of course, as always, if you have questions, please leave them for us. If you love this episode, please share it with the world. What I love about autophagy is we can heal ourselves. That's what that word means to me. And the more we understand about how powerful we are, the more we can line up our health habits with our own healing power. So, Simland, autophagy, all your questions. Excited to bring this one to you.
Child marriage is a global issue, and it is affecting 12 million girls worldwide. On their 18th birthday, they are being forced into a marriage that they did not choose, a life that will not be free, like a life like you and me. So if you want to help support them, let me tell you how you can do this. You can go to Dr. Mindy Pell's /GLAG, and you can donate. And it doesn't matter how much you donate, the smallest amount, if you feel like donating a large amount, you can donate time, you can donate other resources. But what I want you to know is that when we rally around other women that are rallying around the injustice of other girls, these are girls that are being forced into this, every woman on the planet heals. And I want to end with this thought, that when you heal a woman, you heal the world. And as long as these girls stay in a situation in which they don't get to choose their freedom, we are all affected. So let's help support Val by liberating these women, by supporting women, by giving the education that is needed to end the injustice of child marriage. So thank you, Val, for what you're doing.
So I just want to thank you for being here. As a fellow YouTuber, you probably know that videos on autophagy are very popular. People really want to know about autophagy. So can we start with what autophagy is and why does it fascinate you so much? Why do you think everybody's so fascinated by it?
Mm. Yeah, well, I think the reason why it has become popular was, you know, in maybe 2018, 2019, where it started mostly, primarily after the, you know, I don't know, like recognition of this, one of the Nobel Prize winners, Japanese researcher. And he pretty much showed that, you know, autophagy is important for many things and affects like lifespan and longevity as well. And I think that's when people, yeah, started to make, probably there was like a few viral videos talking about the Nobel Prize. And from there on, I personally, you know, stumbled upon it myself as well and started to, yeah, connect it with fasting. I was doing fasting already before that. And that's where, okay, this is actually an additional benefit of fasting, that you get this increased in autophagy. And for those who don't know, then, autophagy is this intracellular process of cell turnover, is, you know, like fundamentally what it is. But yeah, it helps to recycle different components in the cells and eliminate like debris and the junk material. But beyond that, autophagy is also, you know, involved with eliminating of pathogens and bacteria and like even viruses in some cases. And it's involved in the brain, it's involved in the muscles and the gut. So it's like a very fundamental process of just the way your body operates and cleans itself. The benefits are kind of multifold that I just alluded to.
Yeah, 100%. I always think of it like a self-cleaning oven. Like when you stimulate it, you turn it on and it, like, the cells clean themselves. I feel like the word on the street around autophagy is everybody thinks of it as detox. But if you actually look at it, it's not completely analogous with detox. Do you feel like we can use detox as another way to look at autophagy, or is that giving it not enough credit?
I think autophagy goes beyond detox. Because, you know, with autophagy, you can also remove these broken mitochondria, which is called mitophagy or mitochondrial autophagy. And I don't think that happens with detox or like regular detoxification practices. It doesn't happen. And you can also like see autophagy happening in the brain and clearing out plaque and debris material there. So yeah, I think the autophagy goes beyond just detoxification. And like when it comes to, let's say, longevity and lifespan, then there's multiple animal studies at least showing that autophagy is linked to like aging pathways as well. And like blocking autophagy or not seeing adequate amount of autophagy accelerates the aging of different mice. And like, especially if they're like genetically mutated, that they don't express autophagy, that's where they see that they don't live longer, even if they are under calorie restriction, which is kind of interesting. So that kind of shows that it's not only always the calorie restriction that is important, but also like the different pathways that get activated during that time, especially like autophagy. And more so, we can also tell you that, okay, how can we mimic those effects without necessarily, you know, doing certain activities, like whether that be severe calorie restriction or maybe prolonged fasting in some cases. So how can we like, you know, bi-step them to a certain extent and still gain those benefits?
You know, this, you bring up a really good point, and I love to fast. I feel like it's the easiest thing you can do to stimulate autophagy, but there are a lot of other ways that we can stimulate autophagy. I don't feel like they're as good based off of what I am seeing in the research. I feel like fasting is your best path towards autophagy. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I do think that it's one of the easiest ways, or like you don't have to really do anything. And I mean, it's hard to also say, think you know, we don't know how much autophagy you need and how much is good. Like, you know, so there are also like a lot of negative side effects to autophagy. Like, it can for sure, for first of all, you can like fast too much that you start to lose muscle, et cetera. And that's also like harmful for longevity. And there's some instances where autophagy can also promote like metastasis of some viruses, et cetera. Not directly that autophagy is bad, but just because of the energy that's created during that process of autophagy is also like just hijacked, or the energy is kind of stolen by these other viruses or something else. So there are like reasons to not have too much autophagy, and we don't know how much is too much. So yeah, I much rather look at the activities that do increase autophagy and their associations with longevity. So fasting is for sure. For thousands of years, and many cultures have used fasting, and I do think that is acute enough of evidence to suggest that it has a lot of benefits. But to answer your question then more directly, then I would say that the fastest way to actually activate autophagy is probably like exercise. So
interesting.
Because there are studies show that even like 30 minutes of high intensity exercise can increase autophagy as well. And we also know that exercise is also good for longevity, and one of the like cornerstones of being healthier overall. So I do think that you kind of need to do both, to do some form of fasting, but also to exercise for sure, because, exercise increases autophagy, but it also does a lot of other things that are good for the brain and cardiovascular health. And fasting mimics some aspects of exercise. Like it mimics the aspects of improved insulin sensitivity and reduced blood sugar levels and lower blood pressure and the activation of all these other longevity pathways. But with exercise, you do also see this increased fitness, so that you have like more muscle mass and more VO2 max and those kind of things.
So is it a specific type of exercise, and is it to the same degree? Because one of the things that has come up in my community a lot is, how do we measure autophagy? How do we know? I love what you're saying. Like, we don't have enough information to know how often we should be stimulating it. We just know that it's this incredible self-repair system that we haven't been talking enough about. So there's no way to really know if you're doing too much or too little, as far as I've seen. And when it comes to exercise, what I've seen is that it's a specific type of exercise that increases autophagy. Is that correct?
Well, I think that actually both will do. Like resistance training as well as cardio exercise, both will do it. I think, like the difference is like how fast are they going to do it? Mm. So what is going to basically determine... the autophagy isn't like this on and off switch. There is something happening all the time. It's just that at a certain point, it accelerates more, and that like a time gate at which it happens is determined by your liver glycogen status. So your liver glycogen regulates the energy and nutrient sensing pathways in the body, like AMPK and mTOR. So once your liver glycogen is low, which happens when you're fasting or when you're exercising a lot, then after that, you activate the AMPK pathway, which is like this ketotic pathway that promotes ketosis and fat oxidation and autophagy and catabolism, essentially. And that's where it happens. With fasting, you see that the liver glycogen stores tend to deplete within like 16 hours or 24 hours. They're going to be probably depleted completely. With exercise, depends on how long you exercise and what type of exercise it is. If you're doing cardiovascular exercise, then it may take like an hour or something, I think. Or also depends on like if you do it in a faster state, or if you do it if you're already in ketosis, then it's probably going to take a shorter time. Whereas compared to doing the cardio after having eaten like 500 grams of carbs or something like that. So it depends on those things. And I think what I like to think about this exercise is just accelerating the process of going into autophagy, whereas fasting is kind of, you can't exercise for, 5 hours a day. You're going to have to take a break, whereas you could fast for, even 3 days in a row without any problems. So I think it's, for sure good to do this time restricted eating and fast at least 16 hours or maybe 14 hours at least per day, and to deplete the liver glycogen and go into some aspects of autophagy and ketosis. And then at like certain time points, use exercise as well as a gas pedal or something to accelerate it more.
So like stacking them together and would be enhance autophagy. What I'm curious on is that if glycogen is, we see glycogen stores in the liver, we also see it in the muscles, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're exercising, you're actually going after the muscle glycogen. And when you're fasting, you're going after liver in the most concise way I can explain that. So if you're fasted, you're and the liver glycogen's coming down and you're going into a cardio workout, you're bringing skeletal muscle glycogen down because it has to use that glucose to be able to perform its duties. Would that be of benefit if like somebody wants to lose weight, somebody wants to get fit, somebody wants to get healthy? Would you recommend coming at these different glycogen stores and stimulating them together like that in a stacking form?
Yeah, I mean, doing them combined is for sure, I think, more optimal than doing one alone. With cardio, I think, yeah, it depends on the intensity of the cardio that you're doing.
Right.
So you will start to burn the muscle glycogen with cardio as well if you exceed the VO2 max threshold, which is like when you start to switch into the anaerobic state. And usually it's like 65% of your VO2 max is where you start to burn muscle glycogen. But below that, you burn primarily fat and liver glycogen. So any kind of this low intensity cardio is where you burn the liver glycogen more. And when you do like HIIT cardio or sprints and that kind of thing, that's where you start to burn muscle glycogen. I don't think muscle glycogen directly affects autophagy because it doesn't affect ketosis either. Like you can have full muscle glycogen and still be in ketosis. So the liver glycogen is probably where the energy measurement or where your body detects the energy status. And the muscle glycogen is only used like as a backup fuel to do these high intensity activities.
Right.
But still, like there's also like studies showing that the resistance training, which is like an anaerobic activity, that also activates autophagy. And probably the reason for that is because of this like high amounts of energy stress. So yeah, any kind of physiological stress still promotes autophagy as well by activating the AMPK pathway. So AMPK is also not only linked to the liver glycogen, but it's also like this physiological stressor detector almost. And you see that with saunas, for example. Saunas also help with autophagy, cold exposure. And I mean, even like, you know, coffee, which is also like this calorie restriction mimetic technically by turning on these pathways and having an autophagy effect.
And do you think, I did a recent video on the different types of autophagy throughout the body. Like we have, like you mentioned mitophagy. I recently did some research on the endocrine system. They have a label for that. They call it crinophagy. I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know there's a whole set of autophagy mechanisms within the endocrine system. Is it the same concept? It's just, can we just look at autophagy as it's just cleaning these cells up so that they work more efficiently? And we give them fancy names, but really at the base of what autophagy is, it's just repair, it's self-repair. Would you agree? Or do we need to look at these, the endocrine system uses stimulates autophagy different than the mitochondria?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's probably much easier and more effective to look at it as the like umbrella term autophagy, because I've also looked at it and there's maybe the ones I found, I didn't hear about the endocrine system autophagy, but I found like maybe like dozen other names like virophagy, viruses, immunophagy, agrophagy, pexophagy, glycophagy. So yeah, like there's different maybe organs and different parts of the body that go through that process. But yeah, generally there's three like main types, which is like macroautophagy, microautophagy, and chaperone mediated autophagy. But they're all like, you know, autophagy essentially.
Right.
And macroautophagy describes this cell cleanup.
And there's no way to like, you can't like go into a workout and be like, I'm going to clean up my endocrine system right now. Like your body decides where it needs the most cleanup. Is that we just apply the techniques and the body is so intelligent, it figures it out. Is that, would you look at it like that?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't have like, or we don't have any like measurements or waste measures that I know of, but I think that's how probably it would work.
Yeah.
Because that's how the like exercise side also works.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the measurement thing, why don't we have any measurement? Is it too hard to measure? And I don't know if you know Annette Boz. She also has a popular YouTube channel. She has a Boz ratio where she looks at glucose over ketones and divides that. If it's under like 40, you're in a pretty good amount of autophagy. Do you feel like we can use a measurement like that to kind of get into the door in, or do we just not know?
Technically, yes, like it can be. What I've used and heard is the glucose ketone index,
right.
Which is, I think, similar. But at least the glucose ketone index would show how deep of a ketosis you are. And I think that generally, if you are in ketosis, then most likely there will also be increased autophagy. And
right.
Because they are regulated by the same pathways of this liver glycogen depletion and AMPK. With the only caveat to that would be because that, you know, you can still, let's say, eat a large steak and like a ton of butter and be in ketosis and with a low glucose ketone index. But I don't think that in that scenario, you're probably not in like super deep autophagy.
Right.
So it's probably like, you know, if you're in a fasted state and you look at the glucose ketone index, then yeah, and probably tell you something. But if you just ate or something, then it's a bit hard to tell. Like I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, this is something that comes up in our community all the time. People are confused. They're like, but I'm in ketosis, so shouldn't I be in autophagy? And to your point, like you could go on the carnivore diet, you can get into some deep ketosis, but you are definitely not stimulating autophagy because of the influx of protein and amino acids. So one of the nuances with autophagy that I see isn't expressed enough is that it's stimulated not only from glucose coming down, but it's also stimulated from nutrients coming down, specifically amino acids. Would you agree with that statement? Is there something else we need to think about that might pull us out of autophagy other than protein?
Protein is, I think protein could even be like a bigger inhibitor of autophagy than glucose.
Oh, interesting.
Because, you know, protein directly will stimulate protein synthesis and mTOR, which is kind of the antagonist of autophagy.
Yeah.
So mTOR is kind of the growth switch in the body that, when your body is growing, then it's not really recycling and repairing itself. So they can't like coexist evolutionarily. It's like hard to allocate resources to do that. And that's why your body will, you know, detect the energy sensors and switches like AMPK and mTOR. Okay, which one is inhibited, which one is turned on? Then I'm going to either grow, build muscle, or basically go through self-recycling. So protein and amino acids specifically will stimulate mTOR, and in that, at least in that time, will also inhibit autophagy.
Yeah.
But you know, the same applies to carbs and glucose and insulin. So you know, even on a vegan diet, you can still, even if you're like, let's say, low in animal protein, you can still inhibit autophagy by consuming too many carbohydrates and spiking insulin.
Yeah.
Other things that could inhibit autophagy would be like, you know, I think diabetes can also be something that, like, even if you're fasting, can inhibit the autophagy process, because mTOR detects also high blood sugar levels. So if you have diabetes, then chances are, like, your blood sugar levels will, you know, stay elevated to a point where you're under the stimulation of mTOR all the time, and that's going to have like a slowdown effect on the process of autophagy as well. So, but from a food side, I mean, proteins, especially like leucine, which is the main amino acid for protein synthesis, but there are like other amino acids that may not do so. Like collagen is one of those protein sources that doesn't have like a lot of these BCAAs and essential amino acids. So it has only like, you know, hydroxyproline and proline and glycine, which don't spike, or they don't raise mTOR. They're like more neutral in that sense. And I don't think that they probably don't inhibit autophagy either.
So that brings up the million-dollar question of, what do you drink in your fasting window? Like, what is, you know, I'm sure you get this question all the time. So, you know, when buttered coffee became so popular, Dave brought it to the world, you know, everybody was using that as a crutch in their fasting window. And then it kind of morphed into collagen. People were putting collagen powder. I can tell you in our community, a lot of people are curious if they take amino acid powder and they put it in water. Does all of that pull you out of autophagy? What do we need to know about what we drink in that window? Mineral packets. I know you wrote a book on minerals. Like, are those in the fasting window going to impair autophagy?
Yeah, I wish I knew. Or, you know, theoretically, I can say that, you know, things that won't stop autophagy are all these, you know, zero calorie drinks like coffee, tea, mineral water. Even like if the thing has like artificial sweeteners, like this maybe electrolyte powders or something like stevia or something, I don't think they will affect autophagy because there's still no like calories in that. So I think those are safe. Amino acid powders like BCAAs or essential amino acids. Yeah, I think those will probably stop the autophagy process. But how long will it stay suppressed is hard to tell. And right. It also varies greatly between individuals. So the way I actually look at it is, you know, you have to look at your body's energy status in that moment when you consume something. So you could theoretically, yeah, even consume some sugar and still be in ketosis in autophagy if that sugar, like, clears your bloodstream super fast, like if it goes into muscle cells or if you're just under that much calorie restriction or energy stress that the body just, you know, absorbs it super fast. So like if you exercise, let's say before, and you are, let's say, fasted already 12 or 16 hours, 24 hours, then yeah, you can even probably drink like some sort of sports drink and still be in autophagy because you're under, like, you've been exercising. So the AMPK pathway is already activated so much and you're in already deep ketosis. So it probably may not have like a significant impact on autophagy or ketosis even, where someone who is like sedentary in the morning, they drink even like, you know, milk in their coffee, then maybe even that small amount of amino acids and sugar could, you know, in that short time frame could inhibit autophagy as well, because their energy status is kind of lower, or it's not under that much energy stress. So they haven't exercised, they're maybe like overweight a little bit, or, you know, they ate a lot of food yesterday as well. So their body's energy demands are much smaller in that scenario. So in that case, it could be that it does inhibit autophagy. So it's hard to tell. It depends on the person.
That's interesting. So this actually brings me to a video that you did about what's the best fasting window for autophagy. And based off what you just said, I'm thinking, gosh, you know, if you eat dinner earlier, I don't know what the window is. So I'm curious to hear what you're going to say. But if you ate dinner earlier and then the next morning you're going to fast, let's say, till 2 o'clock, then your energy reserves are going to be a little lower when you wake up because dinner was the nutrients that went into your body happened at an earlier time. So what's the best fasting window for autophagy? Let's start there. And I'm curious if it lines up with what I just mentioned.
Yeah. So yeah, you're correct in that sense that if you go to bed like with a slightly emptier stomach or like earlier dinner, then in the morning, you will already be in deeper autophagy and ketosis compared to having like a late dinner. Right. And that's also coincidentally, like, I think from the aspect of like, what's the most optimal window for autophagy and overall longevity, probably, then like some aspect of like earlier time restricted eating where you have maybe like a late lunch or like a very early dinner is probably better than like, you know, having like a super late dinner and skipping most meals of the day in the other end. I would, because first of all, there is like some research also showing that this early time eating is beneficial. And also because a lot of the like autophagy gets processed during sleep together with the other anti-aging hormones like melatonin and growth hormone, and NAD recycling happens mostly during sleep. So like your body will try to do everything together in your sleep where you're repairing itself. And having like a bunch of food probably in your system may, you know, inhibit some of those processes. So it's, yeah, probably smarter to you know, I think you don't need to be having like this, like a 3 p.m. dinner or something like that. You like maybe like 6 p.m. is good enough, and wait at least like 3 or 4 hours before you go to bed to finish your last meal. And yeah. That's already probably gives you like a all kind of optimal results. But yeah, generally like a earlier time for eating is better. You don't need to eat like breakfast, but you definitely, yeah, like so. Having like an earlier dinner is more important than having breakfast, I think. So there's no like real magic to the breakfast. I think the magic is that you skip the dinner or have like an earlier dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like all hormonal intercellular repair is like pointing at eat dinner earlier. It's definitely better because to your point, when you sleep, your autophagy happens when you sleep. So if you can double stack that, triple stack that, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's called Eat Like a Girl. And it is what I would call a food book, more like a food manual. And I've done several things with this book, but there's two that I'm really proud of. The front part of Eat Like a Girl is all the principles you need to know on what food does to our hormones. But I didn't stop there. I have lists. Oh my gosh, because it's a cookbook. There's so many beautiful things I can do with it. So it's in color. I put lists. I put all the toxic ingredients you need to avoid. And I put all the ingredients that are going to support your microbiome and are going to help you make hormones. So the lists alone were so fun to gather for you. But then I wanted to bring you recipes. So there are over 100 recipes in this book. So whether you're plant-based or you're omnivore, I've brought us all into the conversation of what it looks like to support a feminine body with amazing food. So now you're going to be able to metabolically switch effortlessly with the information that's in Eat Like a Girl and the information I put in Fast Like a Girl together. You will now know for your feminine body how to metabolically switch.
When you're in the middle of a fast, do you ever hit a wall and then you really start to struggle? Like, I know this happens to me sometimes. Like, I'm going along, I'm feeling really good, and then bam, all of a sudden I'm out of energy, I'm starving, and it's like my brain is turned off. So check this out. If that's happened to you, there's a really good chance you're running low on minerals. Fasting makes your mitochondria produce more energy. It speeds up fat burning. It helps you make more ketones, so your brain is really sharp. But the part of fasting that we don't talk enough about is that those benefits often come at an expense to your body. So you got to look at your body doing the right thing at the right time always. And when you hit that crash, it's a large chance that your body has had to use a ton of minerals to be able to supercharge you in the fasted state. And if your minerals are already low, you can end up depleted. So that is why I love Beam Minerals. They make a full spectrum mineral supplement that is perfect for fasting. It's in a liquid form. It literally tastes like water. You just have to take a shot halfway through your fast and you can keep going a whole lot longer without the hunger and the fatigue. So if you want to experience this, if you want to try it in your fasting window and see what kind of results you get, just go on over to beamminerals.com. and enter the code Mindy for 20% off. And as always, let me know how it works for you. I'm really excited to bring this information to you all because you deserve to thrive in your fasted state. Going back to the diabetes person, this one's interesting to me, what you mentioned a couple of minutes ago. So when we go into a fasted state, we often see, especially if somebody's wearing like a continuous glucose monitor, we often see blood sugar go up, and because the body's releasing that stored glucose. Is that pulling us out of autophagy? Like when we go back to like the person with diabetes, maybe they have more stored sugar. So when they fast, that sugar comes out. And now they're left with a rise in glucose that pulls them out of autophagy, even though they haven't had any food. So if we see that blood sugar spike in a fasted state, is that pulling us out?
Yeah. Well, it's almost similar to like these studies where people look at a piece of cake and they raise their insulin because of like salivating over the cake.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know, even if it does, I don't think that it has like any real significant effect. Maybe it only stops for a brief moment and then you probably go back faster. So I don't think, yeah, like that this misconception that this on and off switch that, you know, even if you have this rise in blood sugar, then you need to fast again for 20 hours to go back into autophagy. I don't think that's the case. Like, yeah, you maybe it decreases a little bit, but then you're, you know, going back into it faster after the fact. So, yeah, I think that these probably small ups and downs of the blood sugar don't have like any real effect, because I mean, exercise also raises blood sugar and exercise activates autophagy more. So,
right.
So yeah, I don't think that it's going to be, you know, any problem. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I always say is that I look at autophagy like a dimmer switch. Like sometimes it comes on a lot. Sometimes it comes on very little. Sometimes it's completely off. So to your switch analogy, it really is like more of a gradual process, which also leads me to a topic that I don't feel like gets enough discussion in the world of autophagy, which is what happens when you turn that intelligence on and it decides, hey, this cell's going to go rogue. This is a bad cell. I need to kill it. And it creates cellular death, which we know is called apoptosis. When that happens, what we're seeing in our community is a lot of detox reaction. People are getting like, you know, fuzzy brain. They may get some rashes. You know, what do we need to know about apoptosis? And is it a good thing? Should we prevent it? You know, with things like heavy metals, if there's cellular death, do those metals get redistributed into the system? These are some deep questions I have seen just in so many people fasting. I've been curious about it.
Yeah, well, I guess from the directly apoptosis side, then, I mean, apoptosis can be good. Apoptosis can be also bad. You can kill good cells and you can kill bad cells. I don't think you can decide, but I think most cases, the body will choose to remove the, you know, unhealthy cells and cell parts first, for sure.
Right.
Like, and when it does happen, there could be, yeah, like some detox symptoms or some toxins are released into the bloodstream. There are ways to, you know, bind to those toxins, like the different binders. Chlorella and spirulina and maybe activated charcoal, milk thistle, those things can help to bind to those and eliminate some of the detox symptoms. But there's also like some people, like Dr. Mercola has created his own like a fasting protocol where he, if I'm not mistaken, then it's like similar to the fasting mimicking diet. Basically like eating very low calories per day, like only 500 calories or something for a few days. And that in theory, in his eyes, would help to prevent some of the severe detox symptoms so that you're not really going into that deep, but you're still getting some of these longevity benefits through the severe calorie restriction. So eating, you know, calorie restriction is also increasing autophagy, just eating less. And if you are eating only 500 calories, then you are going in a very like semi-fast state and you're practically fasting even if you are eating. So in that case, like you can, for people who may struggle with those issues or if they struggle with hunger issues and they physically can't fast for, let's say, 3 days or 2 days even, then for them, even like this fasting mimicking diet of eating only like, you know, 300 or 500 calories, I think it's still worthwhile because that calorie restriction already is a pretty potent stimulator of autophagy and these longevity benefits.
You would just need to make sure the protein's not high in that 300 to 500 calories. Right?
Yeah. You want to be pretty much eating like, you know, vegetables and maybe like some bone broth and collagen, those kind of things, some healthy fats.
What do you think of the number that gets thrown around a lot is keep your protein under 20 grams? Do you feel like that's still a good marker if we want to stay in autophagy, just to make sure that our protein doesn't go over 20 grams?
Per meal or per day?
I've heard per day, but you know, the longer I've thought about this, the more I'm going back to the dimmer switch. I'm like, well, just make sure it's not per meal, because what you're trying not to do is take the body out of this repair phase. So if you break that 20 grams up into little chunks over, or you do 20 grams and then 3 hours later you do 20 more grams, or let's say you do 19. So you don't kick yourself out. I think it's more about not triggering the body to go into mTOR, basically. Mm. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. Well, first of all, I mean, there are benefits of turning on mTOR as well, and there
Agreed.
Are benefits. Yeah, so sometimes you actually want to eat, like even 30 or 40 grams of protein to turn on the protein synthesis and repair your muscle tissue and help with the recovery. But from the autophagy side, then I think that depends on your age as well. So younger people need less protein basically to turn on mTOR, and it's also easier for them to build muscle tissue. So older people, they become more like this anabolic resistant, which means that it's harder for them to turn on protein synthesis, and they need a higher amount of protein to achieve that. So for regular adults and younger people, you only need like maybe 2 grams of leucine, which you can get, like from 20 grams of protein, and 25 grams maybe to turn on mTOR and muscle protein synthesis. Whereas for the elderly above 50 or above 60, they may need maybe even 3 or 4 grams, so like almost double, to achieve that same effect.
Interesting.
And in that case, per meal, I mean, you can still get away with some protein, so it's not that even like 1 gram of protein is going to stop autophagy or something. I think, even if you have, I mean, vegetables have protein and they don't stop autophagy directly. And I guess maybe like, 10 grams or 20 grams is probably something that could keep you in some aspects of autophagy.
That's kind of how I feel too. Like, as long as we don't trigger that sensor to kick it out, then you know, you're playing, it's like a chemistry experiment you're creating in your body, which is why I love it. You know, a question that comes up for us a lot is, how much time should you spend in autophagy and how much time should you spend in mTOR? And I think I'd be curious your thoughts on that. And then I'd also be curious your thoughts on, we don't want to villainize mTOR. mTOR, to your point, is growth. It's muscle growth. We know now that muscle is the organ of longevity. So what do you think about how we move in and out of mTOR and autophagy? Is there an art to doing that?
Mm. Well, for sure. I mean, it can become an art, and it's definitely a science at the same time. So, it still depends a lot on the goals of the individual and how much muscle they want. Like a bodybuilder, they definitely need more mTOR stimulation than, you know, once or twice a day. Research suggests that for natural athletes, the optimal amount is 4 times per day of consuming around 30 grams of protein 4 times a day to like spread out the protein intake and spike the mTOR multiple times a day for maximum muscle growth. For, let's say, females and people who aren't necessarily super, or they don't want to build like a ton of muscle, then, you know, you can still build muscle with twice a day or one meal a day as well. It's just the difference is a bit like the speed at which you can do it. So, you know, the less frequently you spike the mTOR, then the slower you're going to build muscle. But it doesn't mean that you're going to lose muscle, and it doesn't mean that you can't build muscle either. It's just going to be like a slower process. And, fasting and autophagy can also have like actually protective effects against sarcopenia. So autophagy, you know, by eliminating these dysfunctional mitochondria in the muscles, it actually makes the muscle more like resilient against aging and more robust against this kind of catabolic stresses. So you want to do, you know, some aspects of time-restricted eating still and exercise. And for most people, I think, you know, maybe like, you know, two meals is kind of a good balance. I think 2 or 3 meals. most people don't need to do one meal a day, or I think that there wouldn't be like any like a real or significant advantage to one meal a day over two meals a day. I think it's already within the 24-hour cycle, it's already very similar, or the time differences are so small in the 24-hour cycle, so it's not a huge difference. So like maybe two to three meals. Maybe on some days you can want to do one meal a day. That's also good. But on a regular basis, two meals and still to turn on the mTOR, then you want to have like some protein. And to turn on mTOR and to also activate muscle protein synthesis, which will then maintain your muscle tissue to, first of all, help with your metabolic health and metabolic rate, even to have more muscle, lean muscle tissue, as well as make it easier to lose fat. And from the longevity side, like muscle mass is associated with some longevity. Muscle strength is more than muscle mass, but I mean, you need to have some muscle mass as well to have muscle strength. So the two generally go hand in hand. So per meal, you still want to have like, for most people may undereat protein a little bit, and they should get at least, depends on the body weight, but at least, 30 grams of protein, or 20 to 30 grams of protein per meal. And
Does the type of protein matter? Because there's a lot of controversy as well as vegan, carnivore, and some of the experts are saying if you're a vegan, you just can't get the vast amount of amino acids that you need to build muscle. And some people say that vegans just need to supplement. Do you feel like there's a difference when we look at that eating window? We want to stimulate mTOR. We want to come in every couple of hours with 30 grams of protein. What if I do that with plant protein? Is that going to have the same effect as a grass-fed steak?
Animal protein is considered complete protein, so it has all the essential amino acids, and plant proteins generally are not complete, or they don't have all the essential amino acids. Like animal protein you can get the same effect on muscle protein synthesis and mTOR stimulation from less grams of protein. So let's say, for example, to maximize the mTOR with animal protein, you maybe need only 30 grams of protein for meat, or on a plant-based protein like beans or legumes or chickpeas or whatever, then to reach that same effect, then you may need 50 or 60 grams of protein, which is a lot more calories and a lot more beans as well compared to steak. But it's still possible technically, although the plant-based proteins are less complete. If you get sufficient amounts of protein, then it becomes less important. So if you're eating 160 grams of protein, even if it's all plant-based, then you can still technically get all the amino acids that you need. It's just that you need more protein to achieve that. Whereas 160 grams of plant-based protein, you can get the same effect from maybe 100 grams of animal protein or 90 grams of animal protein, because it's higher quality. And if you're doing an intermittent fasting schedule, then you need to be more on point with the meal quality or the nutrient density of that meal. So because you're eating less often. So to not miss out on the opportunity of getting the nutrients and the calories, then those meals have to be like slightly more optimized from the micronutrient and macro standpoint.
That's such a good point. What do you think of if you go into an exercise state in autophagy? Let's say you do a HIIT workout. So you're double hitting autophagy. And then you come out of your exercise and you get that amino acid trigger that triggers mTOR. So you break your fast with 30 grams of protein. What I've seen as a 52-year-old woman is that's a heck of a way to build muscle, because you're leaning everything out, but then you come in with mTOR and you're powering everything back up. Do you feel like, and as women, I mean, women break down muscle as they start to age and they lose hormones, they lose neurotransmitters. But do you think that's a good strategy if we want to keep a lean, fit look, still build muscle, still stimulate autophagy? Do we just need to backfill in with protein?
I mean, it does. It's almost like this wax on, wax off approach that you need to deplete, and you also need to replenish. If you're like fasting all the time and you're not recovering your calorie restricting and you're restricting protein, but you're not eating back, then eventually you will just, you know, become frail and, you know, maybe get a hip fracture or something like that. So yeah, right. You do. It is very important, especially after 50s, to take, yeah, like the training and exercise side important, and the it becomes more important to eat more protein the older you get. So, you know, young, you can, yeah, get away with less protein, but older, the you generally need more protein. And research does suggest also that, you know, in the elderly, in like 70s or 80-year-olds, then higher protein intakes are better for them, for right. sure. And they are recommended to consume more protein by the authorities as well. So yeah, I think that it's very, you know, important to replenish after the workout. And at that point, you don't have to worry about, or am I stopping autophagy by consuming this protein or carbs or whatever, because you've already done the work, or you've already given your body the signal that it needs to turn on these pathways. And it's not going to, yeah, I don't think it's going to, like, you know, revert or reverse the work that you did. Like, it's not going right. to take it back. It's going to still stick around.
Well, why I always like to highlight it is I feel like in the fasting community, there's a lot of criticism of muscle breakdown. And the way that I teach fasting, the way I know you teach it, is like, yeah, you fast and then you eat. Like, this is not about like calorie restriction all day long. This is about, to your point, I love the wax on, wax off. That's a beautiful analogy. So, but as we age, we're losing sight of the empower of protein. So I think it's really, that was really well said. The other one that I've thought about with research is, I don't know if you saw this study. I mean, you read a whole book on immunity, so you probably did. When a cell is in a state of autophagy, the viruses can't replicate inside that cell. And that was actually a study specifically done on COVID, that if the COVID virus, if it had came into a cell that was a sugar burner with lots of glucose, it would go in there, it would munch on glucose, and it would gain power and replicate. Whereas if the COVID virus came into a cell in autophagy, it actually shut the replication down. Do you know about that study? And the way my brain went was, well, gosh, let's get everybody fasting during the pandemic. And we just shut. That's like a great antiviral that lives within us. What are your thoughts on that?
I haven't seen that particular study, but from a physiology side, it is congruent, or it does fit the idea of how autophagy works. And I think that in a lot of cases, it's harder or it's easier to, you know, prevent the onset of viral replication in the beginning, or you know, compared to doing it later. Like it's harder to like catch up on a virus if it's already spread around a lot, compared to you know, preventing it or stopping it from getting in the first place. So I do think that it's probably if your body is quote unquote like, you know, in this energy depleted state, or there isn't a lot of energy around, your body is like very self-sufficient. It's cleaning everything up. It doesn't have like a surplus of energy in the bloodstream and in the cells. Then, it makes sense that there is, you know, there's not a lot of grip for anything to kind of catch on.
Yeah. I actually played with it a little bit. When I got COVID, I was like, well, let me fast and see how I feel. And then the next day I was like, let me eat and see how I feel. For sure, the day that I fasted, I felt so much better. Like, I felt like my body was just, the immune system was working so much more efficiently. By the end of the day, I was like, I think I'm, you know, I only had symptoms for about 5 days and they were really minor. But then if the day I ate, I was like, oh man, I don't feel as good. So it's an interesting thing to think about when we're dealing with the time when all these weird viruses are appearing, that we have our own internal mechanisms that we can tap into. So I'll send you the study, because I geeked out on it for a while. I was like, why doesn't everybody know this? Everybody should know this. So
Fasting is definitely very potent against bacteria. And like animals, they stop eating when they're under some bacterial infection. And I think it's the scientific term for that is infection-induced anorexia. So you get less hungry if you're sick, generally.
It needs to be infection-induced autophagy. Anorexia has a little bit of a negative stigmatism to it. What talk about some herbs that, you know, we've heard spermidine, you know, can enhance autophagy. I know that coffee can enhance autophagy. What do you think of all those supplements that are out there claiming to enhance autophagy? Is it, are they worth looking at, and which ones are they?
Yeah, well, I think some of the more natural supplements or compounds beyond just, you know, green tea and coffee would be curcumin and ginger are very like natural food substances that also like activate AMPK and have anti-inflammatory effects and boost autophagy. There's cayenne pepper that does it as well. And all these like different herbs and spices, you know, rosemary, thyme, they probably have that effect as well. And yeah, probably the reason because of like this polyphenol content. So yeah, polyphenols generally do it as well, like in different vegetables and, you know, dark skins of berries, and these polyphenols stimulate autophagy or help to boost it as well. Cruciferous vegetables as well.
Would it be as simple as if I take a turmeric supplement, I'm just throwing that one out there, in my fasting window, now I'm possibly amping up the autophagy effect of my cells? Can we look at it that, is it that one-to-one of a relationship?
Potentially. I mean, yeah, I mean, curcumin can be pretty powerful. Depends on like how you take it. Like a supplement, like 500 milligrams or something like that, probably will. If you take it like just a teaspoon or something, maybe that's not like a big enough of a dose to get it. But I think it still will have like some effects. Yeah. And, you know, optimally, you would also want to get something that has fats to absorb the turmeric better. So maybe like the most like, you know, autophagic fat or most ketotic fat would be MCT oil because it boosts ketones and doesn't raise blood sugar, those kind of things. So yeah, MCT oil or coconut oil would be maybe good to take with that like fat soluble supplement.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I feel like it's like the wild, wild west of autophagy out there. Like, you know, everybody wants to know once they discover how cool this cellular healing process is. It's like, well, what's my fastest path there? How do I get there? And let me accelerate it. And then you got all these supplements that are coming out. So
yeah, there is like, I mean, the most like, you know, powerful autophagy supplement or a drug would be like rapamycin or metformin probably because, you know, they just suppress mTOR and insulin, which will then automatically turn on autophagy as well, pretty potently. Like if there is like an exercise in a pill, then that would be it, or as close as it we could get. But I mean, they also have a lot of side effects.
I was just going to say,
I don't think that, you know, they're worth it to take, but yeah, they do stimulate autophagy as well. And I mean, there's many other compounds like you know, sulforaphane and NMN and resveratrol, even like glucosamine does it. So there are like plenty of supplements that help to boost it.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about when we first started. You said there is some new science on autophagy. Do you have anything new that we're learning about autophagy in general right now? I feel like the curiosity around autophagy is at a peak. People want to know about it. They want to understand it. Is there anything that is new and innovative way of looking at autophagy that we haven't discussed here?
Well, one very new study that I saw was in August 29, and it was actually about rapamycin that in fruit flies and mice using rapamycin for only 3 months was giving pretty much the exact lifespan extension effects as giving the rapamycin throughout their lifetime. So like just a 3 month period was enough to see like a lifelong benefit on that. And the mechanism by which it was through like gut autophagy as well. So rapamycin suppressing mTOR, and then the gut autophagy was kind of they explained it to be the reason why these mice and flies live the longer. Of course, 3 months in mice and flies is like the equivalent of, I don't know, 10 years in humans or something like that.
Right.
And it's still like not a really practical thing. But yeah, that's just an interesting study indicating that, it has benefits. And actually, like another study about NMN also showed that NMN helped with gut autophagy as well. So yeah, gut stuff is maybe popping up.
It all comes back to the gut, right? I feel like we go down these rabbit holes of science, and then we always realize, oh wait, we got to think about the microbes. We got to come back to what their effect is on our human cells. So, what's your personal fasting regime like? Do you fast every day? Do you vary your fast? I'm curious how you approach fasting.
Usually I eat like one meal a day in the dinner. And during the daytime, I will have like, you know, coffee or some other tea, something else. I may add like a bit of milk to the coffee, but not like a large amount. And during my workout in the afternoon, I'll consume like a protein shake to help with the workout. So I'm getting like maybe like 1.5 meals per day. But the most of the calories come in the dinner.
So you have like one main meal and a few little snacky that's actually my go-to as well. I like to, when I break my fast, I usually kind of gradually go into it, and then I eat my big meal at dinner. So yeah, I absolutely agree. So okay, to finish this up, and this is, thank you by the way for having this discussion with me. You know, you probably get thousands of questions on your YouTube channel, as do we. And the questions I just asked you, I feel like we keep getting over and over again. And it's such a cool concept that people really should grab this. We should not forget how powerful our bodies are. So I appreciate that. Here's my last question for you, and it has nothing to do with autophagy. What do you have a gratitude practice? Like, do you have something you do every day for gratitude? I've been working on spreading more gratitude to the world. And if so, what is it? And is there something in 2022 that you're incredibly grateful for? Because we just came out of a time where everybody didn't like what was going on. And now there's a lot of good happening. Is there something this year that you're really grateful for?
Well, this year I'm grateful for my wife, who we actually recently got married.
Oh, congrats.
Last week.
Last week? Oh my God, congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks. And just makes me grateful.
I bet. Do you have a daily gratitude practice that you do? Do you meditate? Do you get out in nature? You have anything in particular that you do?
Not every day, but sometimes I just have like maybe a few moments where I'm just thinking about things to be grateful for, usually in relation to like, you know, other events going on in the world, and just like a brief moment of gratitude.
Agreed. Well, okay, you have some really cool books that I want people to know about, really good ones, one on minerals, one on immunity. But you talked a little bit about you have a book on autophagy, an ebook. Is that correct? Or is it an actual soft cover?
It's an ebook as well as a paperback, and it's called Metabolic Autophagy, which goes into a lot of the like pathways that regulate both mTOR and autophagy and AMPK, as well as giving like more practical tips of how to do it. And I have it. You can get it on Amazon as well, but on my website, you can get it for free if you just pay for the shipping. It's on seamland.co.
Beautiful. Okay, well, we'll leave that link in there because our audience is a very inquisitive audience, and I love that they want to geek out on this stuff. So that's an incredible resource. So thank you. Where else can people find you? You have a great YouTube channel. I follow you on Instagram. Are there other places that people can go learn from you?
YouTube and Instagram are the main channels. So it's Seam Lund on both of them.
Perfect. Well, thank you. I appreciate you entertaining my autophagy brain and going down this path with me. And, you know, like you, I just want people to believe in their own healing power, and nothing will tell you that your body can repair itself like understanding autophagy. So really appreciate you, and I hope our paths cross live one day. Are you coming to any conferences in America to speak at all?
Not this year, but maybe next. We'll see. But yeah, it was a great, really appreciate being invited, and enjoyed talking.
Thank you so much for joining me in today's episode. I love bringing thoughtful discussions about all things health to you. If you enjoyed it, we'd love to know about it. So please leave us a review, share it with your friends, and let me know what your biggest takeaway is.